This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Kenny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. So, Mike, we got an overreaction Monday. We know everybody's coming out with the hot takes. And last night's game left us plenty of meat on the bone when it comes to opinions, because that might have been one of the ugliest football games I've seen in recent memory, that featured six turnovers and the two teams combined scoring 26 points. All in all, it was an ugly game, but the Baltimore Ravens, we know they thrive in ugly games. They've won six one-score games throughout the course of this year, so this is nothing new to them. But it's just, you know, one of those things that leaves us to wonder, because they are the number one seed in the AFC currently, how good is this Baltimore Ravens team, and are they, what their record suggests, the best team in the conference?
That's probably a no for me on that, Chris. I think when we look at the AFC, we'll talk about them a lot later. The Patriots are the best team in the conference right now. When I look at what I can trust, they give me the most of that. And a large portion of that has to do with injury, Chris, because we know with this Baltimore team, it has all been about what they've been able to overcome on the injury front. This team losing guys, important bodies up like Ronnie Stanley at the beginning of this season on the offensive line, the running back room decimated before the start of the year, and certainly the secondary in that same boat as well. So they deserve credit for what you just described, being able to win ugly, but that also doesn't mean that I think that's necessarily built to last when we get to December and January football, especially not if Lamar Jackson's going to throw four picks in that same time.
Yeah, I'm willing to give Lamar Jackson a little bit of grace, though. We know the illness kept him out of last week's game against Chicago, where Tyler Huntley stepped in and they were able to get the dub. And so I'm willing to attribute that one bad game, the worst game he's played of the season, on a little bit of rust coming back from that and still some lingering effects from whatever it is that he was dealing with. But all in all, I think it's a good sign for the Baltimore Ravens that they were able to find a way to win a game like that last night, where they turned the ball over four times. Because it shows that their defense is starting to turn the corner when it comes to them playing up to the standard that we've come to expect from Baltimore Ravens defenses. Over the course of the last four games, even though the team is minus six in turnover margin, their defense is only allowing 19 points a game. I think that says something. They limited the Browns to 40 yards rushing and 4-13 on third down. So I think that's the big takeaway for me when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens. And if their defense is going to continue to trend in that direction, I have confidence that this team is capable of making a deep playoff run. I also have confidence that they're capable of hanging on to that number one overall seed in the conference based on the remaining schedule, just because we know their offense isn't going to be as bad as what they showed last night. We know Lamar Jackson is an MVP caliber quarterback. But if you're getting the defensive play that they're getting from what we've seen based on the second half, the early part of the second half, then you've got to have confidence that this Baltimore Ravens team is a true title contender.
I think this Baltimore Ravens team is certainly one of the best in the AFC. What that means in this season isn't a ton to me based on what we've seen in that conference, Chris. We saw, and especially in that division, we saw them certainly hand this Browns team a loss. We saw the Bengals get back to looking more like themselves, albeit against a Steelers team that's crumbling right now. I think for this Ravens game, we know division games are different, Chris, but still for me, this seemed to be a lot more about what was on the other side of the football here. In a Kevin Stefanski offense with Baker Mayfield that does not seem to have any confidence in its quarterback right now.
Yeah, they're at a crossroads right now in Cleveland. I mean, you're talking about them only having one win against opponents with a winning record this season. And of the five remaining games, Pittsburgh is the only team that's not above 500. So this team could go either way. There's got to be some concern about where they're at as a group. And to me, it is a leadership moment for Baker Mayfield, because when you're at this point in the season where it feels like your team can go either way, you're relying on the veteran leadership in the locker room to kind of set the agenda and to get the rest of the guys to lock in and focus on the things that are going to lead to the team having the kind of success that they want to be able to go out there week in and week out and execute at a high level and put yourself consistently in situations where you can win football games. And right now, the Cleveland Browns aren't doing that consistently enough for us to have confidence in what we're going to get from them, especially when they're playing against the better competition. So that's the one thing that I want to see from the Browns and ultimately what I want to see from Baker. I know a lot of people have been looking at this season as a referendum on him because of the contract implications, and they want to see whether or not Baker is capable of being able to win you a game with his arm and not leaning so much on a run game. But I think what's just as telling or just as important is his ability to show that he can grab this team by the throat and lead these guys to where they want to go. We saw elements of that in the second half and in the playoffs last year, but it certainly hasn't felt like he's picked up where he's left off. Now, we can attribute a lot of that to the injuries that he's been dealing with all year long, but ultimately this is about him being able to show the leadership intangibles that led to him being the number one overall pick back in 2018. Like, that's what I want to see on display as this team moves into December football, because, Mike, the one thing we know about the Cleveland Browns, they got enough talent to get the job done. They do. This is a really talented roster top to bottom. It's just a matter of, can they put it all together? Can they overcome the adversity that has them in this recent slump, this recent pattern where they're winning one and losing one? Can they bring it all together and figure out a way to play their best football in the final month of the regular season? If they can, then we'll be talking about the Cleveland Browns punching their ticket to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I worry less about the playoffs for them, Chris, but more about anything beyond that, right? Because the story of this Browns team has been, all right, since Baker Mayfield's playing this year with a dinged up off shoulder, everything else has to be damn near perfect. And last night in their game, what did we see? Jack Conklin, their right tackle, who had already been down for some of the season with injury, now going to be done for the season after an injury suffered in that game here. We saw after the fact more of this like messy version of the Browns, where you got Kareem Hunt's dad now on social media being critical of Baker Mayfield. Like, there is too much smoke for there not to be a fire of dysfunction behind this team that makes it impossible for me to trust them. Again, if we're looking at the Ravens and saying injury at critical position is going to make it tough for me to trust you once we hit the postseason, for the Browns, it has been a lack of what you just said here. It doesn't seem like there is anyone capable of grabbing the reins right now and keeping this team from starting to eat itself from the inside out.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I worry about, because we said coming off of that Detroit game, it was a bad look for Baker not to address the media, and even worse, that his wife felt like taking a shot at his teammates in an effort to defend her husband's toughness. Like, those are things that your franchise quarterback can't do, and the quarterback position by nature is a leadership spot on your team. So when Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are assessing what kind of contract or what kind of commitment the franchise is going to make to Baker Mayfield beyond this season, like, these are the things that get baked into whatever decision that they make. And this is just a moment where you feel like Baker Mayfield can assert himself in that locker room and can assert himself with his position in the franchise long term. And so that's what I'm waiting to see. I feel like them being able to have back-to-back postseason appearances would be a huge step in the right direction and would be validation for the organization deciding to stay with Baker and stay with Kevin Stefanski. But all of that remains to be seen. I guess the biggest thing is, with the competition stiffening the way that it's going to in the final, what, five games of the season, like, this is one of those where the Cleveland Browns are going to have to regroup during their bye week and figure out what kind of team they want to be. And the leadership is going to have to step up to the forefront and hold everybody accountable in that regard so they can go out there and put themselves in the best positions to try to have success. We don't know if they can do it. They certainly have the talent, the players, the personnel to do it. But it's just a matter of them being able to galvanize, you know, the troops and be able to go out there and get this done.
And because who do they get on the other side of that bye week? Ooh. None other than a do-over with the Ravens. So December 12th, circle that one in your calendar. We'll see if these teams can run it back and have it look a lot cleaner than it did, especially in that stretch where you had too many men on the field after too few men out on the field after a penalty on a punt. That was basically the synopsis of the dreck that we had to watch in that football game. Coming up next, though, let's head back to college football, because so much of the conversation is going to be about a coach who's changing teams in Lincoln Riley, heading from Oklahoma to Southern California. Coming up next, let's talk about a coach who stamped his ability to stay where he is for a good long time with a win this weekend. Next on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, Jim Harbaugh finally did it. He finally did it. Since he's been at Michigan, he didn't have the opportunity to beat Ohio State, but in the snowfall around the Big House on Saturday afternoon, he was able to get it done, in large part thanks to the ground game from Michigan with Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins setting a school record, and that defense led by Aiden Hutchinson being able to get after C.J. Stroud in the passing game. A really impressive performance from the opening kickoff to the final whistle. Michigan absolutely taking care of their business in Ohio State, and now setting up for a matchup in the Big Ten Championship against Iowa. Michigan has got it all out in front of them now in terms of being able to create a pathway to be in the Final Four in the college football playoff ranking. And this is unusual territory for Jim Harbaugh in this program of recent memory.
Yeah, this is entirely new for a program and a coach that have constantly been under fire, Chris, that especially as of late. Remember back to this offseason when Michigan announced that Jim Harbaugh and them had reached a contract extension that would take him through the 2025 season? I don't know, Chris, based on all these 10-year deals we've seen handed out, this combined with what will likely be their first entrance into the college football playoff, I'd expect them to be no lower than third in the upcoming rankings, but likely just replacing Ohio State at that number two spot, and I'd say heavily favored to beat Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. We're going to be talking about a coach that's now going to get to stick around Michigan for a good long time. And Chris, in a way that I thought is probably going to be the case for a while, this was the last thing remaining on what he needed to do. We had seen double-digit win seasons. We had seen them get better at recruiting. They needed to get over one hump, and they did. And now there's going to have to be no more twisting and turning about Jim Harbaugh's future at this school.
Yeah, no, I think that's the best case scenario for Jim Harbaugh, but also for Michigan, because the thought was a couple of years ago, if you're going to transition away from Harbs, who are you going to transition to? Are you going to be able to get a bigger name? Are you going to be able to get somebody that's more of a legend in the lore of your program than Jim Harbaugh? Probably not. And so it just felt like this was one of those things that Michigan fans were waiting to happen. I know my fiance Mel, she's a Michigan alum, and so we were watching this game closely and intensely and rooting hard. But this is one of those things that everybody wanted to see happen because everybody wanted Jim Harbaugh to have an opportunity to have success at the highest levels with this program. And that wasn't going to happen until they got over the hump that is Ohio State. They just happened to be in the same division in the Big Ten as Ohio State, and they were on an 8-game losing streak. And something about that had to change. And Jim Harbaugh said it going into this week, like, this is the group that's going to be capable of being able to make that change. Aiden Hutchinson said a reason why he came back was to play in this game, and he showed out with 3.5 sacks. They were getting after it again. The physicality was there, dominating both sides of the line of scrimmage and being able to really neutralize that Ohio State passing attack and then asserting their will in the rushing attack, having to run the ball 297 yards, almost 300 yards of rushing on the ground. That speaks to the physicality that Michigan was able to play with, and I think that's what allowed them to finally beat this Ohio State team.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and that's exactly it. It was how. This was a good old-fashioned butt-whooping. From start to finish, Michigan bloodied their nose up front on both sides of the ball. This was Jim Harbaugh, Michigan's head coach, after the game on what this win says about their team.
Says they were well-prepared, very determined. You know, my favorite saying of all time is, where there's a will, there's a way. And the will was very strong with our team. The way it feels now, it just feels like the beginning.
I appreciate Jim Harbaugh, who is now 1-5 against Ohio State, taking this opportunity to go on to say, and I'd imagine reference to Ryan Day and Ohio State, that some people are born on third base and believe they hit a triple. Chris, I think Ryan Day has acquitted himself very well as Ohio State's head coach, but I'll be damned if I stop Jim Harbaugh from talking his talk after finally getting this win.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Harbaugh deserves it, doesn't he? Like, it feels like this was a long time coming. And I got to be honest with you, Gojo, early on, I was a little bit nervous because Michigan comes out with the opening drive, 10 plays, 75 yards. And you're like, man, this game could be different. They force Ohio State to go 3-and-out. They pinned them inside of the 5 on the opening kickoff. And then Cade McNamara on their second drive throws a red zone interception. And I just hear my fiance Mel saying, here we go again. We're going to find a way to lose to Ohio State, but that wasn't the case. And this group, this team, found a level of resolve that we're not accustomed to seeing from Michigan teams in the past in this particular game. And I think there is something to be said for that. There is something special about this group of guys. There is something special about the leadership that they have. And so I'm glad that they were able to get over this hump because I think college football is in a much better place when this rivalry is more competitive and you're talking about the stakes being an appearance in the college football playoff and competing for a national championship. I think overall, the big winner this weekend, not only the Michigan Wolverine fans, but college football fans as a whole, because this is the best rivalry in all of college football. and to actually have it have some luster now because Michigan is actually able to win in this game, I think that does a lot for it.
Yeah, overall, if you're a college football fan that was looking for change, that was tired of what had felt like the norm during the college football playoff era, this weekend went a long way in unseating a lot of those opinions. The college football playoff had been defined by Clemson and Alabama at the top, by teams like Ohio State, by Oklahoma being involved in that mix. And what did we see in all the rivalry games that mattered? Ohio State get downed by Michigan, who is likely now en route to make their first college football playoff appearance. Oklahoma State taking down Oklahoma in Bedlam, ensuring that the Sooners won't be involved in the playoff picture and that Oklahoma State might have a shot at all of this one. Clemson going to be out of the picture here. Alabama looking vulnerable against an Auburn team right now. If you are looking for something different, college football may have finally opened the door for some of those other powers hanging right around in the periphery to finally kick this thing in and get the party started even more. So Jim Harbaugh going to be coaching football around Michigan for a good long time now. Mm-hmm. And if it keeps looking like it did this weekend, this could be a team that provides us at least the most entertaining matchup to feed to the Georgia defense that's going to slaughter everything in front of them. Now, needless to say, Michigan will no longer have to worry about making moves at the head coaching spot.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
But coming up next, we will talk more about the coach that did decide to move in Lincoln Riley and the kind of ripple effects that will be felt through college football because of it. We'll get to that next after this word from Wendy's. Now, a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with a fresh cracked egg and cheese on buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So you don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. We'll talk to Spencer Hall next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golda Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, I know it's an overreaction Monday. We usually have wall-to-wall NFL talk, but we got to talk about what's going on in college football because we had some huge, huge hires with some big-time programs. Of course, Lincoln Riley decides to make the move and leave Oklahoma for Southern Cal. And then Louisiana head coach Billy Napier decides that he's going to take the job to become the next head coach of the Florida Gators. So that leaves two other coaching vacancies, one at Oklahoma and then one at LSU. And the question now becomes, like, which of those is the more attractive job? And then what are the ripple effects of Lincoln Riley leaving OU to go to SC?
Yeah, Chris, when you look at it top to bottom, 2021 could end up becoming one of the most impactful years of college football movement we've ever seen, right? Like, when you start at the very beginning of all of this and say, all right, the announcement of Texas and Oklahoma declaring their intention, breaking away from the Big 12 and heading to the SEC, you've got that on top of one. On number two, you've got the emergence of hope in the college football playoff era, right? We're getting ready to go into a college football playoff that won't involve Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and likely Alabama, who's going to have a tough time from here on out making it. So now you've got everyone buying into the hope of all of this. You couple that with the fact that in this offseason, we're going to be talking about new head coaches at the University of Southern California, at Oklahoma, at LSU, at Florida, and maybe at Miami before it's all said and done. Some of the premier institutions in college football. And Chris, all of that put together could change the course of so many things at once that it is both exciting and terrifying at the same damn time.
Yeah, but I love it, though. The shifting dynamic with now name, image, and likeness becoming a huge factor and players wanting to be at prominent programs. Like, I just feel like that is going to create a lot more parity in college football, which means there's going to be more competition and that the names at the top aren't going to be the same teams every single year. This is not going to be a decade in the college football playoff that's dominated by Alabama and Clemson. This feels like we're moving into a new era, and I'm all for it. And so, yeah, I am excited about what Lincoln Riley could potentially do at SC. We're starting to see what's happening with recruiting and players decommitting from Oklahoma. Malachi Nelson, the five-star quarterback that's a part of the 2023 class, decommitting from there and citing the fact that he was committed to Oklahoma because their coaching staff had shown the ability to be able to develop quarterbacks. Like, this going to be something to be said for Lincoln Riley being able to keep talent in that Southern California area at home. When you start looking at quarterbacks that are in the landscape of college football right now, Bryce Young at Alabama, C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, Matt Corral down at Ole Miss, and then, you know, DJU, even though he's not having a great year, all of those guys are from Southern California. So there's an opportunity for Lincoln Riley to get his hands on some of the premier prep talent at the quarterback spot. And we know, as quarterbacks go, as these programs go, and so when teams are able to get those high-profile guys, they can also recruit a lot of other positions. So that's the thing that becomes exciting about Southern Cal, is that they finally have a head coach whose name has cachet when it comes to high school recruiting. And I feel like that can make a huge difference in terms of putting them on the fast track to be competitive not only in the Pac-12, but also in the hunt for national titles. So I'm excited about this move for college football because it feels like it makes the Pac-12 relevant again.
It does. And Chris, like I always look at this, I think we all come with our own vantage points and biases, right? And for me, USC was the premier brand of college football when I was growing up. The early 2000s SC teams of Pete Carroll are what I get nostalgic about with the sport. And so it's less that the logo matters and more than what you said, Chris. It is, you've now got premier talent that's going to be staying out west if Lincoln Riley does what we all expect here. And that's a rising tide lifts all ships thing, right? Like, you don't get Georgia in the SEC, LSU and what happened without the dominance of Nick Saban and Alabama. A more chaotic year in the ACC because people have finally found a way to get closer to what Clemson was doing at the top combined with them in a down year. And so now, like, keeping all of this talent out west, it does so much more for what college football has kind of transitioned to being, right? More of a national sport than the regional way it used to be consumed.
Yeah, and being able to have more competition within the Pac-12, like being able to have a team that can rival what Oregon has done over the course of the last decade and a half, like that's going to make a huge difference in terms of being able to attract more eyeballs. And we know with more eyeballs, you're going to get more kids wanting to stay in that conference, more kids wanting to stay on the left coast. And it all makes sense because they believe that that's a pathway to them being able to get to the National Football League. So when you have, you know, that competition within the conference and then those games being nationally televised, you know, I think that ends up making a big difference. You know, when they're in prime slots and when you have, you know, other players that are, you know, committing to staying out there, five-star recruits that are committing to staying out there, I think that becomes one of those things that perpetuates itself. And so I think that's what SC and their athletic director has to be thinking with the Lincoln Riley hire. And I think as far as the coaching options that they had available to them, this was the best move that Southern California could make. This was the biggest name. Nobody thought that Lincoln Riley was going to leave Oklahoma, especially the way that he renounced the LSU job. And then seemingly overnight, we get the news that he's going to jump ship and go to Southern California. This was a huge get for that program, and I don't think that this is going to be a long turnaround in terms of when we're going to see SC rise to national prominence once again.
Chris, an overwhelming slam dunk hire by Mike Bone, you just mentioned, the athletic director at the University of Southern California, because you're right. We were a night removed from Lincoln Riley in the press conference after their loss at Bedlam to Oklahoma State saying this definitively about that LSU job that he had been rumored to.
I'm not going to be the next head coach at LSU.
Chose his words very carefully in that instance. Didn't say he wasn't leaving Norman, Oklahoma. But Chris, for them to be able to pull this off, it will undoubtedly be the coup of this college football offseason where we mentioned all those big jobs, all those big head coaching vacancies open. And in a time like you mentioned, where you've got name, image, and likeness that is going to be a premier mover in the way that recruiting works in the college football world, where you've got the one-time transfer rule that's going to make it easier and easier for you to go and get immediate results, which, by the way, Lincoln's best work has been with transfer quarterbacks during his time at Oklahoma. All of this is a recipe for one of the premier brands of college football being back in a way that it has not been in recent memory as USC lands Lincoln Riley as their new head coach. We will wait for the details because we're already starting to see some of the rumblings about what this contract and situation could possibly look like. USC is a private school. We may never get concrete answers on this, but boy, oh boy, some of the reckless speculation will be fun on this front because we know he has secured a bag. No offense to Norman, Oklahoma, but to go and live in Southern California, which we've seen what it, you know, the West Coast has done for Cliff Kingsbury's lifestyle, and the results have been very, very good. Now, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Coming up next, though, Oklahoma, not the only brand name program in North American football that may be dealing with some unraveling before our very eyes. We'll watch its pro football counterpart deal with some of the same soul-searching next on ESPN Radio.
Ryan Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Gojo, we got to talk about that disaster that took place out in Pittsburgh, out in Cincinnati yesterday with the Bengals beating the brakes off of the Steelers. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, but the Steelers losing by 31 to the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Mixon setting career high for being able to rush the football 165 yards before the end of the third quarter. Like, it was a situation where the Steelers were outclassed in every single way. They were out-physicaled by a division opponent in the Cincinnati Bengals that are perennial bottom dwellers in the AFC North. And it just, it looked like a shell of the Pittsburgh Steelers that we had come to know. And the fact that you have the biggest margin of defeat for the Steelers against the Bengals since Boomer Esiason was the quarterback of the Bengals, I think it's a time where the Steelers have to take inventory and actually assess where they are as a football team and where they are as an organization. And a lot of that soul searching that they're going to do, one of the things that they've got to look at is the quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, I mean, they... Chris, unfortunately, the story is they probably should have been looking at that quarterback last offseason in a way that was much more serious than where they are now, because where they're at now is exactly where most of us expected them to be with this quarterback under center. Now, the difficult part is, defensively, I don't think we expected what we saw yesterday, and now, as we just saw the news that they've had to place TJ Watt on the COVID-19 list, bad goes to worse, because we've seen when he's off the field, Chris, there's almost a non-compete on that side of the ball. That is a defensive player of the year caliber player that defense could potentially be without. Like, I don't want to say the sky is falling in Pittsburgh, but I'm saying it has been cloudy and gloomy around there since this offseason if we've been paying attention, and now they're going to have to face that reality that not only is Ben Roethlisberger and the end of his tenure going to set them up for failure going forward, but that they missed their window to prevent that this last offseason.
Well, you know, one of our favorite coaches is Mike Tomlin, if for no other reason, the sound bites that we get in the post-game press conference. And yesterday, we weren't disappointed. Mike Tomlin, here's him addressing the media after yesterday's defeat to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Not a lot to say. Tip our caps to those guys. They played today and won and did the things that was required in a big game like this. And we didn't, to be quite honest with you. We didn't play nearly well enough in any of the phases, and significantly I thought that we got beat up front on both sides of the ball, and they won the line of scrimmage. And when you win the line of scrimmage, the game has a chance to look like that.
That is a jarring thing to hear about a Pittsburgh Steelers football team. Like, we talked about identity change going on in college football right now, but waking up in a world where the Pittsburgh Steelers are pushed around on the defensive side of the football by a Cincinnati Bengals rushing attack? Like, that's real? And the same offseason where they completely swapped out and hockey line changed their offensive line. Chris, is this going to be the first losing season for Mike Tomlin as a Steelers head coach? Because at 5-5-1, it certainly seems like it's trending that way.
I sure hope not, but based on the remaining schedule, it's hard to rule that out. And you know, it doesn't get any easier for the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of their road to toe. And with the limitations that they have on the offensive side of the ball, you mentioned it. They can't really run the football. Their offensive line isn't particularly great at being able to reestablish the line of scrimmage. And you have a quarterback that can't push the ball down the field. So ultimately, your offense is limited, which makes you a lot easier to defend. So points are going to be hard to come by. And then when your defensive front seven gets dominated the way that the Bengals dominated it yesterday to the tune of 38 rushes for 198 yards, it's going to be hard to win against the upcoming opponents that you have going on. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are in unfamiliar territory as well, being in the cellar of the AFC North. But Gojo, with the remaining schedule, I mean, you've got Baltimore Ravens, you're at Minnesota, you've got Tennessee, at Kansas City, the Cleveland Browns, and at Baltimore to finish out the season. You tell me where the easy wins are in that schedule, because I don't see them. I mean, every team with the exception of the Minnesota Vikings is over 500, and the Minnesota Vikings are a live dog for a wild card spot in the NFC. So this is going to be tough for Pittsburgh. It's going to be tough for Mike Tomlin to maintain his streak and never being below 500. But again, we're talking about being able to find, what, three wins in the next six games? And I don't necessarily know if I can find them. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are in trouble, but we knew that this franchise ran the risk of being in this spot by running it back with the quarterback that was past his prime in Ben Roethlisberger. So this is about what you get when you roll the dice on that one. They felt like they had maybe another season to squeeze out of Big Ben, and unfortunately that's not the case. Now it's just about trying to position yourself where you don't embarrass the franchise in the second half of this season and try to find a way, a path forward in terms of what your identity is going to be in the post Roethlisberger era of Steelers football.
Yeah, and Chris, it just shines a light on more of the decision-making that got them to this point, right? The decision certainly to not explore a serious candidate for quarterback before this is going to ring the most loud and true. But when you talk about building up that identity, taking a running back, as much as I love Najee Harris coming out of college, at the 24th pick in the first round when you had as much to replace on offense as this Pittsburgh team did, it has borne you none of those fruits. And going forward, the benefit of a rookie running back is supposed to be getting their best years on a contract that's going to be more cost prohibited to you with more control. That doesn't really serve you when you don't have the identity and the guys up front to make this happen in a meaningful way.
Well, you know this because you're an offensive lineman and you played at a really high level. Like, all running backs run the same when there's no hole, and that's not very well. And that's not Chris Canty saying that. That's what Bill Parcells used to preach to all of his teams. And so you realize with the Pittsburgh Steelers, their offensive line doesn't get any push at the point of attack. They don't open up any holes, and it's been a long time since we've said that about the Steelers' offensive line. And on the defensive side of the ball, they're just getting pushed around all over the place, and you wouldn't expect that with a front seven that features Cam Hayward, that features Devin Bush, that features T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith, and others. You just wouldn't expect that, but that's what's going on right now. And so I don't know how Pittsburgh gets it fixed, but there are clearly problems right now, and you just hope that this team, based on the pride that this organization has, finds a way to be able to figure it out, because I think this is a bad spot for Mike Tomlin to be in, but I don't necessarily know that there's going to be a path out of this for them in terms of being able to overcome the deficiencies that are on this team.
No, you're right. And Chris, the more I think about it, the first round pick with Najee is one thing, and even hanging on to Ben Roethlisberger, I can spin as endearing for a quarterback that has certainly meant as much to your championship history in this franchise as Ben Roethlisberger has along the way.
You can't do it though, Mike.
Oh, Chris, I'm with you.
You can't do it.
But I think the most damning part of this is what they did in allocating resources around him. Spending that top pick on Minka Fitzpatrick, that was bad business. I said it was bad business at the time, and it's proving even more so now, because that is not going to help and change your franchise nearly as much as the opportunity cost lost to taking a quarterback there would have.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? We talked about it a lot. Even Ben, back when they drafted Mason Rudolph with a third-round pick, he said he thought that they should spend that elsewhere. And I think you're realizing, like, in today's NFL, you've got to have a quarterback waiting in the wings in order to have that successful handoff, because no position in pro football based on the rules today is more important than making sure that you got the quarterback position solidified. And unfortunately, the Steelers don't necessarily have the resources to go out there and do that in the short term.
The Steelers are dealing with those quarterback issues. Coming up next, though, we'll look towards tonight's matchup and another franchise at a major crossroads with its future Hall of Fame quarterback next on ESPN Radio.